This is Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination, written and produced by students at Smith College.
Hi, I'm Christine.
I'm Jade.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Mia.
We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights. This season, we are exploring the story of Ordained Women, a feminist group working for women's ordination in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Ordained Women gained national attention for their direct action events from the fall of 2013 to the spring of 2014, and then again when their spokesperson, Kate Kelly, was excommunicated by the LDS Church that following summer. A decade after all of this, we talk with some of the women who helped organize with Ordained Women. Through interviews, we will learn about the impact that Ordained Women had on their lives and on the LDS Church, which, to this day, still does not ordain women. Each episode of this series investigates a different topic, and this episode will focus on the ways in which Ordained Women members faced opposition, both in their own personal lives and from the church hierarchy.
We wanted to start off by talking about opposition from the other side of the coin. That is, what were the Ordained Women members opposing?
We talked to Hannah Wheelwright about how her involvement with the organization affected her interpersonal relationships. A little bit about her is that she was born in the DC area to a Mormon family, and while she was the only Mormon in her school, she later went on to study at Brigham Young University. And up until that point, she had always thought the marriage factory stereotypes were exaggerated, but the second she got to Provo, she quickly found that the mythic sexism she'd always heard rumors about were not entirely rumors.
Basically, I went to BYU for college, and immediately upon landing on campus in Provo, Utah, was hit in the face with a feminist awakening, because immediately, my very first weekend, like, small talk with some other random male student at BYU, he was like, "What's your major?" And I said, "Political science." And he said, "Ugh." He made that noise. He was like, "Ugh." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "No guy's going to want to date a girl that's opinionated. That makes you sound opinionated." And everyone had been, like, all my non-Mormon friends had been warning me, like, BYU, it's a marriage factory. And I was like, that's an outdated stereotype. It's not like that anymore. And then immediately, I was, like, immediately experiencing it.
Hannah got the attention of Kate Kelly, founder of Ordained Women, when she started her own blog called The Young Mormon Feminists. From that point on, Hannah's college experience was heavily shaped by her involvement with the organization, and those who vehemently opposed the cause sought to bring her down. The longer she was a part of Ordained Women, the more convoluted and complicated her faith journey became. But after the experience of being disciplined by her ward's bishop, it taught her to stand on her own two feet, regardless of how painful it was to do so. At one point, her parents were emailing her, saying that her ancestors would be rolling in their graves if they saw what she was doing. We wanted to highlight specifically how, from the moment of her feminist awakening, Hannah has had to facilitate direct action, be in the public eye, and take on the emotional pain of a goal that is still far from being achieved. We will now move on to another story of a feminist awakening taking place at college. Before there was Hannah, there was Lori Stromberg. Like Hannah, Lori was born into a Mormon family in an area that was not predominantly Mormon. In her words, because she was a good Mormon girl, she was expected to make that college migration to Provo, Utah. She believed that BYU was God's university and was determined to be a student there. Here is where her commonality with Hannah's story deviates. Her feminist awakening was started by her interpersonal relationships. Whereas Hannah reached out to others from a place of personal awakening, it was Lori's family home evening sisters who introduced her to the Women's Political Caucus.
It was not a big group at the time. But I went to, and I thought, oh, that's very interesting. And I was intellectually curious. And so I went, and that's where I learned about the Equal Rights Amendment. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is truly compatible, you know, this seems very right, and it seems like it would be compatible with my religious beliefs. At that point, I was asking questions about, not in a very sophisticated way, about patriarchy and my place as a woman in both the secular and my religious society. And so I heard about the Equal Rights Amendment. I thought, well, this is perfectly compatible with things that I find that are right and good. But who wouldn't want women to have full equal status? And it, I think it came to a head when the LDS Church started working against the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. And at that point, I was, you know, I had to look at very seriously at the amendment, and I did research, and I thought, I think they're wrong on this issue. And if they're wrong on this issue, then that gave me, that sort of forced me to confront the idea that I had to look seriously at everything that I believed in order to, it didn't feel scary to me though. It felt like freedom to question, and a sort of permission to question. Soon came to the realization that women were second-class citizens in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
And so how someone comes to the conclusion that women should be ordained is unique to that person. We've seen that taking such a stance could feel like massive responsibility to one person, but freedom and enlightenment to another.
We also wanted to hear from our interviewees about the story of Kate Kelly's excommunication, how it influenced their faith, as well as how it affected the morale of the Ordained Woman movement. Kate Kelly, founder and face of Ordained Woman, was excommunicated from the LDS Church in June 2014. Though the majority of LDS women were in support of the decision, it also left many feminists in the church reeling. They were devastated, and the implications weren't good either. Hannah Wheelwright, a longtime member of Ordained Woman, speaks about the aftermath.
The initial time was just a total blur of like devastating heartbreak, and it really like echoed throughout after. Like, a lot of people saw her excommunication as like, there is no hope for you in this church. Like, you don't even try to make anything better because you will be punished like this.
Hannah and other members of Ordained Woman felt incredibly discouraged after the decision. If the church was able to excommunicate Kate Kelly, then the church would be able to excommunicate them too. They realized just how real the threat of punishment was and how it loomed over their heads. It wasn't a matter of if they would be punished. It was a matter of when they would be punished. In fact, many members of Ordained Women actually left the LDS Church on their own volition, instead opting to join other Christian denominations or leaving organized religion altogether. Hannah is the latter, choosing to leave organized religion after her experiences with Kate Kelly's excommunication and Ordained Women's rebuffed attempts to join the priesthood sessions during General Conference, which is a biannual worldwide gathering of the LDS Church held in Salt Lake City, Utah, and streamed online for members who can't attend, where church leaders share sermons and reflections on the gospel. She also shares how she felt abandoned by the church. That feeling of abandonment led Hannah to question her faith.
In 2014, I essentially reached the point towards the end of that year where I was like pleading with God to like answer my prayers for like any kind of sign, direction, etc. And I hit a point where I was like, I just don't care anymore to know a God that doesn't want to know me. And I don't want to spend the rest of my life just like searching endlessly for something that's never going to come. So for me, it's been more about like a kind of apathy about the question of whether God exists at this point.
The impact of Kate Kelly's excommunication lowered morale among feminist Mormons, as it showed many women that church leadership will not listen to their voices. They were hurt by how callously the church blew over their concerns.
I was really troubled by how it just broke so many people's hearts that a lot of Mormon feminists were really struggling to even come together and process it. And there's a lot of ways that now, with more distance, I'm able to see it's kind of like, when you're in an abusive relationship.
Although the Ordained Woman movement couldn't convince the LDS Church to allow women to join the priesthood, the organization brought many new changes, such as the church officially instituting more gender-neutral pronouns when talking about the priesthood. However, most importantly is the sense of community that developed among Mormon feminists. Yes, Kate Kelly's excommunication was a huge blow to their cause because of her role as the face of Ordained Woman. But because of the publicity this brought to the movement, many Mormon feminists learn they have a support network of like-minded individuals. Though the movement has slowed down, every day they strive for equality within the LDS Church.
However, the church has a long history of excommunicating well-known feminist Mormons, and we wanted to ask the former members of Ordained Women if they experienced any formal discipline from the church, and if that is still a fear. Hannah Wheelwright explained her unique situation.
I was disciplined by the church. It was at BYU after I had been involved and like publicly involved with Ordained Women for, I think, at least like a solid year. I moved houses, and so I moved to a new congregation under new church leaders. And that church leader immediately called me in and put me on informal probation, I think is the technical term, which is like, there's, you know, the worst discipline is excommunication. Below that is being disfellowshipped. And then below that is like being put on whatever this was, informal probation, I think is the term. But the point being, I wasn't allowed to take the sacrament. I wasn't allowed to speak in church. Like, I wasn't allowed to, like, you know, in Sunday school, like, offer a comment. I wasn't allowed to do that. And it was really, really painful, like, especially because while I was at BYU involved in Ordained Women, I had a number of different, like, faith journey, like, at different times I didn't believe in God, and then I believed in God again. And so there were different points where I was really wrestling with my own, like, what I really believed.
Hannah was told as a 19-year-old college student that she had to take down a post on the Ordained Women website that her church leader did not approve of. However,
worked out that it was at the very end of my time at BYU, and I literally just got a job in DC, got offered a job, and I immediately moved to I basically just ran away, ran out of his jurisdiction.
But Hannah explains that this pressure from the church,
it really taught me to stand in my own beliefs and be comfortable, like, if I say I believe something and I'm going to fight for it.
While Hannah was able to find strength in a difficult situation due to pressure from the church, she was not the only member of Ordained Women that the church targeted. Deborah Monson explains that
many of us experienced soft discipline, right? Informal discipline. I found out that I had been disfellowshipped, which is right below excommunication. But without a court of love that they have, right? They didn't tell me. Nobody told me. I found out because one of my friends who was still in the ward said, "Did you know that you're not allowed to pray in the meetings?" And I said, "No, what?" And she said, "Yeah, they told us in ward council that we can't call on you to pray in meetings."
In some cases, the church hierarchy took action against members of Ordained Women without even notifying them, like in Deborah Monson's case. Whether it be through formal disciplinary action or social ostracization from those within their ward, the board members of Ordained Women faced opposition because of their conviction that women should be able to hold the priesthood in the LDS Church.
We appreciate Hannah Wheelwright for sharing her experiences as a member of the women's ordination movement and her willingness to share the intimate parts of her journey within the LDS Church and her experience after leaving and learning how to be able to stand up for what she believes in. Hannah learned all of this through direct action, trial and error, and the guidance of other Mormon feminists she worked with as well. Hannah became one of the faces of her movement, reckoning with different parts of her identity and continuing to inspire others to do the same. And that includes our podcast for today. Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, used by an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike Creative Commons license. Special thanks to Hannah Wheelwright and Lori Stromberg. Also thanks to Dan Bennett, and Meredith Richter of the Smith Learning Research and Technology team. Thank you to Professor David Howlett for connecting us with our guests. Lastly, thank you to the Smith Religion Department that supports public-facing student writing and oral histories at Smith College. Tune in next time for Episode 5 to learn about the aftermath of the women's ordination movement on women's rights. Thank you.